Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and I want to wish a very happy Hanukkah to those of our listeners who are celebrating. I believe that many of you may be listening while you're in the midst of Hanukkah week. So enjoy your holiday.
Yes, everyone.
Lots
happy Hanukkah.
Of joy, and it comes a little bit before Christmas this year, getting us ready for the Christmas season. It's very Christmassy here in New York, kind of cold weather, which is appropriate for December. And then the Christmas tree is up and the decorations are up and the crowds are in Manhattan. And the shoppers are tearing packages.
And the department store windows and all of that stuff.
The ones that haven't gone under, you know, Lord and Taylor, which usually has a wonderful Christmas display, is now turning into a WeWork. It's a WeWork space, just an office space.
So. It was an institution in my
lifetime. It was. Well, you know, it's creative destruction, right? So, in the news this week, what do we have that's of interest? Anything that strikes your fancy?
It's been kind of sleepy so far this season. You know, I see...
You know, you always say that.
Yeah, I see more negative press...
But
supplements, but that's become a regular thing.
That's a drumbeat. But
it's a drumbeat. It's an agenda. Yes.
There was. this, I got to laugh because some people have dubbed this the Grinch that stole Hanukkah, and there's a headline in Allgemeiner, which is it's actually a Jewish newspaper. It's written in English, but it's a Jewish newspaper, and they have. You gotta laugh. The headline is, let's see, fried potatoes are deadly, New York Times warns as Hanukkah nears. They say it may be the most strangely timed article in the history of movable type. The New York Times has chosen the week before Hanukkah to publish a long article warning about the supposed health dangers of eating fried potatoes. So we haven't yet received notice from the powers that be, the Anti-Defamation Society, that this is an anti-Semitic article. But they say it'd be one thing to publish such an article out of concern for the health of Jewish readers, in the vein of "Okay, everyone, Hanukkah's coming. Don't eat too many latkes, or you might be spending the fifth through eighth nights in heaven forbid." The cardiac care unit of the hospital. But, at least to judge by the language of the Times article, the newspaper managed to publish a pre-Hanukkah warning about the health risk of fried potatoes without anyone there even realizing that the holiday is coming. Okay. So, I guess this is a barb at the very secular New York Times. you know, and so they... It's not just the war against Christmas. It's the war against Hanukkah conducted by the liberal media. That's
right. Because so, it's religion after all. So therefore.
Okay. Yeah. So they're trying to take all the knockus, all the joy out of Hanukkah.
Yeah.
So that was one article that struck me this week. There are more, as we'll get into with some of the... Oh, here's this one I got to comment on, and I'll talk about it more on my weekend program. The chances of your being metabolically healthy are just 1 in 8. And so it's interesting, you know, what they consider the criteria of being metabolically healthy, because metabolically healthy is sort of an amorphous term, like... Are you metabolically healthy? Yeah, sure. I think I'm metabolically healthy.
I'm MH, man.
Right. Yep. Well, it means that that they looked at the criteria, actually looked at the study, and I'll do a deeper dive on this. But they looked at blood glucose, triglycerides, which they think should be less than 150. We think that should be less than 100.
Yes.
High density lipoprotein, cholesterol, blood pressure, and waist circumference, which they believe should be under a certain threshold.
Yep.
And it's very few people actually are in... line with these things. And so what are the chances that two people in the same room could be metabolically healthy? Very slim.
Very slim.
And yet we two are in the same room. And probably many of our listeners
yes.
who follow our advice. So, you know, if according to these calculations, only about 1 in 8 Americans meet these standards for all 5 factors. Okay?
Okay.
And we'll talk about that.
Yeah. We haven't noticed that obesity has come down by any measure. If anything, it's increased, I think, more in our young people still due to a lack of exercise.
I just pulled up the stats here. The glucose had to be less, fasting glucose had to be less than 100, hemoglobin A1C less than 5.7, blood pressure 120 over 80, triglycerides less than 150, HDL greater than 40 or greater than 50 if you're a woman.
Yes.
40 for a man, 50 for a woman. Mm-hmm. Not taking any medication. And what was the waist circumference? Oh, boy. Help me out here. 102 centimeters for men and 88 centimeters for women.
Oh, it will likely be like...
Was it 2.2?
Well, I think 38 inches for men, 35 inches for women, something like that. Or the men, it might be 40 and 35. But if you're of Asian descent, that waist circumference, if you're a woman, might be 33 or 32. But here's another gauge to go by a little bit. You could take your height in inches. This is not a gold standard. This is a quick and dirty method. You could take your height in inches, cut it in half. Your waist circumference should not be more than that half.
Right, and that's
pretty accurate. If you're a 5'6 woman, that's 66 inches.
Right.
Waist should not be more than 33. 33 is quite enough, too. Thank you. So
they say waist circumference, men less than 40 inches.
40, okay.
So that's not such a tall order to have a waist
it's
less
not.
Than 40 inches.
It really isn't.
It's like, okay, so with women, it's going to be, let's do 88 centimeters. 88.
Is it centimeters or centimeters?
Well, is it tomato or tomato?
Okay.
Is it Caribbean or Caribbean?
Caribbean.
I prefer to speak
Caribbean.
British when I'm speaking in precise scientific terms.
Aluminium.
Aluminium, okay. Yes. So anyway, so it's 88 centimeters or centimeters. Probably centimeters. Let's be American.
Yeah.
We're in America, so let's be American. 88 centimeters is 34.6 inches for a woman.
Okay.
So if you're more than 34.6 inches.
Yeah.
As a woman, then
you're not metabolically
healthy.
Right.
Because
right.
women have this, you know, supposed to have a waist, you know, a waistline.
Right.
Men, 34 inches is pretty common. That's fine, you know, generally. Men are bigger.
Mm-hmm. Men are taller, so the rule applies there, too.
That waist-to-height ratio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, those are the big stories of the week, so let's get into questions.
Let's get into questions. Actually, we have a comment, Dr. Hoffman.
Yep.
This comes from Dale. Dale writes, and it was after reading the newsletter where you were talking about the future of nutritional medicine. That was a 3-part series that you did. This was part 3. And you say, one of your sentences, you start with, bear with me, as we have to take an even deeper dive. And bear with me, you spelled it B-E-A-R. Mm-hmm. Dale writes, oh my, come on, doc, bear with me. You have to talk to those proofreaders.
Right.
Yeah.
And of interest is that his comment is riddled with typos.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But it was like this like exuberant reaction, like, come on, bear. It's not bear
it's
with
not
me.
It's not bear with me.
It's B-A-R-E, bear with me.
Yes.
But bear with me has the connotation that, come on, take your clothes off with me.
Yes.
Bear
yes.
with me.
B-A-R-E,
and it really,
yes.
And as strange as it may seem, it is bear with me.
Like the grizzly, like the polar.
Like the, but also bear, like in navigation, it's bear straight ahead.
Yes.
You know, and that's.
For bear.
Or, right.
Even,
and, you know, like bear left, bear right.
Yes.
You know, as in the navigation instruction.
Yeah.
So bear with me. That doesn't mean, you know, get a picture of a grizzly bear, you know. It is a funny expression, though.
Yeah.
It's
a request for forbearance.
Right.
For a
foreigner, that must be very bedeviling.
Oh, yeah. Well, the English language is tough.
Yeah. It's got some weird expressions.
It's got a lot of rules and regs and all that
yep.
kind of thing. So Dale, Dr. Hoffman was correct in his spelling of the word bear, B-E-A-R, which
I
means...
I stand uncorrected.
Yes,
and
you stand uncorrected.
I just wanted to make that point. So.
Because bear with me means have patience with me or be tolerant with me.
Right, and I said that just before I started to unleash this very complicated explanation of genetics. So bear with us as we continue our questions.
Right.
Okay. But don't bear with us in the other way, please.
Exactly.
Keep your clothes on.
Keep your clothes. We've got one from Gary. Dear Dr. Hoffman, if you would ever care to do it again, I would very much look forward to a new edition of your best supplements of, he says 2019, but we're, oh yeah, for upcoming.
Yeah, upcoming year. Upcoming.
So.
Forecast.
Can I guess what one of those would be for you?
Sure.
CBD.
CBD, big time.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But also, True Niagen is really on my, very much on my radar screen, and I'm very excited about it. And interestingly, my talking about it has really done something, is that it's become, I think it is the number one or number two product in terms of sales on FullScript for our FullScript dispensary. People are really adopting it. And I'm happy to see that, because it's a very that's a very high quality product. That's not available over the counter. It's available through physicians, and you know it. I really think the science behind it is very plausible.
Yeah.
So that's the nicotinamide riboside. Then there's CBD, and I think CBD is just incredible. I mean, so many patients give me great feedback. Yeah. You know, I sent you an article.
You just sent me an article.
I sent you an article about CBD for Crohn's, pediatric Crohn's disease.
Yeah.
Which is a terrible problem, because younger and younger kids are developing Crohn's, and there's a very soothing effect of CBD in Crohn's. I didn't read the entire article yet. I just sent it to you, but it's exciting. And, you know, it's also for just routine issues. Like, for example, it's not a secret that last week I had a cold. I sounded much worse. And I had some tough nights where I found that you know, that nighttime thing where you go to bed and it's like, oh, darn, I've got a cough. And it's just going to keep me up. And it's really nagging.
Yeah.
So what do? You take like NyQuil or something. Mm-hmm. But this ruins your next day. I mean, it knocks you out. But then you're all dried out and you're hungover. And it's just crappy stuff in there. Or you can drink some hooch. You can drink some whiskey or something. But then that has some adverse effects too. So instead, I took a couple. Usually take just one if I have issues sleeping, but I took two capsules of CBD, plus CBD oil is the brand, and it's the yellow, which is the more concentrated, so it's 15 milligrams, so it's a total of 30 milligrams.
Plus CBD oil.
And it was a very effective cough suppressant,
And
I slept deeply and very refreshingly through the night. In fact, I had a very unusual experience. I had about a 10-hour continuous sleep, which I needed, because sleep is very restorative if you're sick.
That's true.
I didn't mind sleeping that long. Usually that's like too much time in bed. But so that was, and many of our patients are giving us feedback about sleep, about anxiety, about mood.
Yeah.
We just saw one of our patients who was extremely anxious, and she's doing very well with the CBD.
Yes, she is.
I mean, she's
seeing a lot of
so anxious. And, you know, I actually said, maybe you should start seeing this therapist, because to cope with the anxiety, she said, well, I really don't feel I need one now. And, you know, sometimes people are in denial. I say, yes, you do. You know, you're just kidding yourself. I backed off. I said, you seem to be handling things very well now.
Okay. So for sleep and for anxiety primarily, but this will be interesting about
sleep, anxiety, inflammation, many inflammatory conditions in the gut,
like
in the joints, you know, MS, you know, certainly, you know.
Would you still, in your list of supplements for 2019, favorite, would you still rank vitamin D?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a perennial. I still like NT factor, although we don't talk about it that much. There's, you know, curcumin is still high up there on my hit parade. The magnesiums that we like these days, I mean, there's some newer magnesium formulations, magnesium 3 and 8, which works more on the nervous system because it can cross the blood-brain barrier and works in the nerves, so... you know, there's some newer products, that are exciting. I like, you know, Osteothera, which is the osteoporosis formula that we use from Claire.
Yeah. What about SPM Active?
Oh, that's an interesting one. You're right. Yeah. SPM Active is, I think, exciting because it has some of the anti-inflammatory potential of fish oil, but it's more concentrated.
Yes. Yes.
It has resolvins in it.
Resolvins,
which are very interesting set of compounds which actually resolve inflammation. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking it personally. I'm using it with patients, and they're getting good results.
Terrific. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a. I mean, we're just brainstorming. We haven't really formally sat down, but maybe it's time, you know, to do another article talking about the. And some of them are perennials, and some of them are newbies.
Right.
I mean, they don't always have to be newbies. They can be just things that we
have to just be
that have stood the
vogue.
Test of time. That have stood the test of time.
Exactly. Yeah. Vitamin D, curcumin, all of those. So, wow. Maybe Gary and the rest of us can look forward to another article of your favorites upcoming.
Yeah, he put a bee in my bonnet. You know, it's and it involves it. You know, it involves though. It one of the problems with that it involves a certain amount of diplomacy. Because you don't want to give short shrift to some of the products that are out there that are very good.
Yeah.
So in you're making a selection. So by definition, you're limiting yourself to 10 or 12 products.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's so many products that are worthy. I may serialize it. I may do
You
several.
Might have to do a series of the best of. Yeah, that could be as many as 30 supplements or so. That would be great. That would be interesting. Okay. Yeah. Gary, thank you for your email. Thank you for your question. We've got an email from Michael. And Michael says, hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. You had recommended Oncoplex ES to a friend who suggested that they consult with you. Thought that the main advantage of it was that it contained myrosinase, which is an important enzyme, which enhances the availability of sulforaphane. However, it seems that it does not. Apparently, there is some product that did not contain the myrosinase, but Sulfora Clear by Metagenics does contain.
So let's talk about this issue because it's very interesting. Is that brassicas vegetables contain something called
Glucoraphanins.
We have different pronunciations. Yeah.
See?
You call it myrosinase. I call it myrosinase. But, you know, I don't know if there's any formal.
Sonometers. Yeah, okay.
Right. So, you know, we'll go 50-50.
Okay, we'll go 50-50.
So,
glucoraphanins.
Glucoraphanins are compounds that are present in cabbage family vegetables. Mm-hmm. Which are precursors to sulforaphane, but they have to be acted on by something called myrosinase. Mm-hmm. Now, fortunately, in most of these cabbage family vegetables, there is myrosinase, which is an enzyme. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, in nature, they're packaged in different cells. So when you cut the product, you release some myrosinase. But when you chew, you absolutely combine these things and you then get a potential production of sulforaphane. You also can get some production of sulforaphane by your gut flora.
Ah, right.
Because there's enzymatic action on the glucoraphanin precursors to create sulforaphane. Now,
if you've got a well-working gut with the proper microbiota.
So let's back up. What is sulforaphane good for? Well, sulforaphane, very interestingly, they just did an article on sulforaphane in diabetes. You know, in diabetes, there's cognitive decline is accelerated. We know that diabetics are more prone to dementia and Alzheimer's. And even if you have a borderline hemoglobin A1C, that's bad for your brain.
Yeah.
A study showed that sulforaphane can slow that process towards dementia. And of interest, sulforaphane was used in a clinical trial in kids with autism and showed cognitive benefits.
Wow.
So at both ends of the life continuum, in childhood or infancy, but also in older age, it protects the brain. But it also may have anti-cancer effects. That's why they call it Oncoplex. With the word onco from oncology in it. Mm-hmm. So what I did notice, I mean, this is an astute listener, and the listener is right, is I previously believed that the claim that they could actually take myrosinase and put it into a capsule was a bogus claim, that myrosinase could not be kept active and made available in a capsule, that you had to have your own myrosinase in your body to activate it.
That enzyme has to be in the gut.
I've since recanted that opinion, and I think, so my recommendation is that people use that what's it called?
Sulfuroclear. Sulfuroclear
by Metagenics, which mm-hmm. actually has both the brassicans precursor and it has myrosinase to convert it to sulforaphane.
Yeah.
You know, there's several products out there that contain that, but. Oh, and by the way, you know, taking Oncoplex is not a waste of time, or actually, I call, on full script, it's called sulforaphane, same as Oncoplex. Yes. And it's not a waste, it's just maybe...
Because your gut is likely having...
To convert it, yeah.
Converting it.
Yeah.
Myrosinase.
I don't know if it uses myrosinase in your gut or whether the mm-hmm. bacteria work directly on the brassicans to make that conversion. Mm-hmm. But if you have a healthy gut, you're likely to make the conversion.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are other foods that you can take with, you know, foods that are particularly rich in myrosinase include...
Cabbage.
Daikon. Yeah, daikon to
Daikon radish is a beautiful radish.
Yeah.
And it's great for digestion.
And watercress also mm-hmm. has a lot of myrosinase. So if mm-hmm. you take watercress with your cabbage, you know, and make a salad or something. Those are some ways to amp up your absorption of the mm-hmm. cabbage family healthy precursor.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right.
Also, horseradish. Horseradish is a good way.
Spicy. Great.
And, you know, probably these just ordinary red radishes, you know, these because
they have a nice bite.
Yeah. And that may be the myrosinase that you're tasting.
Yeah, red radishes are wonderful in a salad. For those of you avoiding nightshades and you're looking for that red substance in your salad, pick up some red radishes.
Yeah, I always do.
And they're delicious.
I've been working on a package of red radishes at home.
And you could take the green tops once you've thoroughly rinsed them and let all the sand loose and everything. You could saute them in a little garlic and olive oil. It's delicious.
Really? That's a bridge too far for me. I'd throw them out, but I probably should try that
because
radish greens are supposed to be really good.
Yes.
They just seem so green.
Yeah, yeah.
But they taste good with olive oil.
They taste good. Not like carrot tops. Carrot green tops are not very good at all. I've tried them.
Right.
I love mustard greens, the turnip greens, the beet greens.
Yeah,
everybody loves beet greens.
I sometimes at the store say cut them off. Have them cut them off in the market.
Take them home.
Okay.
So saute them with your other greens even. Wonderful.
But it is good to take them off because if you leave them refrigerated with the greens kind of get cruddy.
They
also suck the nutrition out of the...
They do. You have to cut them off. Otherwise, you get
like shriveled radishes. Yeah.
Exactly, because they're sucking the nutrition out of the root.
So
they're still living, so to speak.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Yeah. Well, looking at the clock...
You're kidding.
Yeah.
It's
time flies
time?
When you're having fun. And so we divide these podcasts into two parts and we're going to... Proceed with more questions in part two.
Mm-hmm.
Layla, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two.
Is it true that hard boiling the yolk of an egg makes the cholesterol less healthy?
Okay, great question. So we'll tackle that when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman today with Layla Mudin. She is our nutritionist in residence. By the way, listeners, if you want to send your question to us, and I didn't mention this earlier, usually do, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination. For questions, radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll be right back.